at the stadium. And at the stadium, the community was limited to a few minutes. They cut off people when they're asking questions. Even though there was substantial time at the very end of this forum, they did not allow for further questioning. And so if we're going to have a good faith forum and process, we need to allow for a significant amount of time, community engagement and dialogue, and not having the community's voices silenced in that process. I realize that I'm out of time, so I'll save other comments. And I'm just hoping that this commission would also consider, in addition to taking testimony in the very beginning of this meeting, to also allow for it at the end, because it's difficult to comment
meeting with
until we hear what the commissioners are thinking and what you decide upon. So just formally I'd ask, please support a bail, a significant bail reform bill and a moratorium, and continue to build upon what you submitted last year to the state legislature. Thank you.
Carrie Ann, we have added to each of the agendas for the last couple of meetings that there's also public comment at the end.
Okay, great. Sorry. I apologize. I did not look at that very closely. I've missed a few meetings. Thank you. And I would just say there have been some meetings with legislators currently, and a few legislators have commented to say that we're waiting to hear from the Oversight Commission. And so I really believe that this is part of your, you know, the ability, the power of the commission to influence legislators. They are willing and eager to hear from you. So please exercise that authority. Thank you.
Question, Carrie Ann, Mike down here. How are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm wondering, Judge Viola is the chair of that Criminal Justice Data Commission. I can't remember the name of the staff. They actually have a staff in place. How are we going to know what they're doing? Do we invite them as an oversight commission, or do we detail our chair to talk to them? Because it's deafening silence, and I'm very unhappy we haven't gotten more information, because that's data-driven.
Yes, and I think that we need to make policy decisions informed by data. And so I would recommend a sort of two or threefold process. You can extend an invitation for that person to attend a specific meeting and ask them to present what information they have. You can also send a letter as well, and asking for it just through handing over data that's been collected, even if they're not at the next meeting. And then I understand that the CJI is also required by law to submit a legislative report similar to the Oversight Commission before the legislative session. But my concern in waiting till again the very end is that this is precious time. That data that they're collecting could be utilized to make decisions from the Oversight Commission, or even in what bills you may support moving forward at the state legislature. So I would recommend it's several strategies: invitation, letter requesting the data, and then see what happens there. And if you do not get a response, perhaps going to the judiciary, the chief.
I think that we have, Carrie Ann, I agree with you, and we within the commission know how to move this forward. And yes, so we will move it forward. Thank you.
Okay, with no further.
I have a question. I'm not sure if this is time also for public testimony or if that is later.
Well, this is, but I would appreciate, I can't see you, nor are you identified on your Zoom. So
I'm sorry.
Okay, go ahead.
My name is Jasmine. I prefer not to use my last name. And I'm here with my mother, Lara. And I first want to say thank you for allowing me to speak today. I have a family member, my brother, who has currently served 6 out of 10 years at Saguaro. And the reason for my attendance today is that my mother and I are absolutely appalled and shocked at the lack of medical care needed for Saguaro inmates. They're basically being ignored. It took 2.5 months, which a month and a half of those were daily requests from my brother before he was seen by medical staff, which unfortunately led to possible permanent damage. So I have a few questions. Isn't the state of Hawaii responsible to provide the community level of care for those that the state incarcerates, no matter where they are housed? Also, how does Hawaii handle constitutional violations that happen at Saguaro? How can families help their loved ones serving time abroad when problems with inadequate health care arise? How can we be involved? How can we help our family members because they have no voice? And so these are just some of my questions and concerns. This was basically the final straw for me as a family member of a loved one that has been incarcerated. There are many inhumane things that happen within prison, but there's not time to talk about those. So if you could please help me in understanding these issues with lack of medical care. Aloha for your time.
I'm going to ask that you, if possible, on the emails, now Lisa, help me. Is there a way that she can present us with a letter to you or to me with her concerns so that we can address them more specifically and ask the people the questions?
Yeah, I would suggest an email to me or to you, whatever she feels most comfortable with the questions and details that she wants the commission to look into.
Okay.
As you know, the commission has received letters from inmates in the past from Saguaro detailing various complaints. And so that's probably the easiest, but it's up to her as to what she feels comfortable with. If she wants to handwrite a letter,
I feel comfortable sharing an email with these questions as they are very important to me to be answered. However, I think it's important to know that retaliation is real for inmates, and inmates have a very real fear of sharing information because of that. Hence why it's taken 6 years to speak out. I think that there's a lack of security for inmates. And although they are there for punishment and do their time, they also are humans and they deserve basic needs as all humans do, which one is medical care. So
Mr. Patterson did put his email address on the chat, if you can see that. So if you want
to come to what I'm doing right now is sending to Jasmine your email address, Lisa. I'm sending to Jasmine your email address.
Yes, that's fine too. Whatever she feels comfortable.
How to get in touch with you, okay? And so Jasmine, when you see the chat come up at the bottom for you, please open it up and you will know how to get in touch with Lisa, okay?
Wonderful. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, everyone.
Does Angie McFarlane still want to, her hand is still up? I don't know if she's still there.
Okay, thank you. How do I take my hand down?
Yes, getting the wrong person.
Yeah.
You have to, if you go to reactions, so you see at the very bottom, there's like a gray bar that has the share screen square in the middle.
Yeah.
Two buttons to the right of that. There's a button that says reactions, and you click the same thing that says like put your hand down, like the same button that you used to put your hand up.
Oh, got it.
Thank you, everyone. We're going to move on to agenda item 2, update on the hiring of the oversight coordinator. So, fellow commissioners, as you know, we had a 2-week hiring announcement for the oversight coordinator from the October 4th to October 18th. We received about, and my number could be wrong as I'm checking my emails every day, about 8 applicants at this particular time prior to the 18th. So what we need to decide right now is, as a commission, we need to sit down and I'll be mailing out hard copies to you folks, remembering that this is a personnel issue that we will gather to review the applicants together, okay? I'm hoping that we can do that. Well, let me go over the process. Once we look at the applicants and have a discussion, determine the interview process, another date, we'll probably be Zooming the interviews. And we all went through this, you know, about over a year and a half ago. And then coming up with 3 names to recommend to the governor. I'm hoping that this process can be done, you know, as close to the end of November as possible. Yeah. would like to have an oversight coordinator in place prior to the opening of the legislative session. Okay, so if we can have a discussion real quick about a next week time that we could get together, and we'll start at that date to make the plans for the rest of the process, and when we can sit down and review the applicants. Any suggestions on times?
Well, Mark, I think we can do this among ourselves in email. This isn't part of the discussion.
Okay. So that's where we are. I just wanted to bring it up to date and let everybody know that we do have the applicant. We do have a list of applicants. I'll be sending out the dates that we can meet. Or we'll get together and figure that out, and we'll begin the process. But just so everyone knows, we hope to have the recommendations before the end of November. Yeah. Actually, that's a long time, but we taking into account all of our schedules and whatnot. So we're very excited that we're beginning this process to get our oversight coordinator in play. And as we go through the agenda, we're going to start looking at what we have planned for them to do on their first day. So that's all I have to say about the update. Any questions?
Mark, Mike here. Yes. Given this is our turn to fast walk rather than be part of the slow walk, so I will make time out of my schedule. And I think sooner than later, I reviewed all of the applications. They're very strong, and I think we can do this fast, I hope.
Yes, I'm just giving us time to make, that first meeting will decide how fast that goes. Thank you, Mike. Okay, no more questions on the update on the hiring of the oversight coordinator. Move on to item number 3. Good morning, Max.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Start off with active positive cases within our facilities. So this is as of yesterday, the 20th. HCCC had one active inmate. Calava, one active staff, 13 active inmates. And UCCC had one active inmate. We don't have any active cases currently in Arizona. As far as vaccinations, department started the vaccination incentive on October 14th. Immediately, over 2,500 inmates were eligible for the $50 incentive. This incentive, funding for this incentive is scheduled to expire in December of 2024. We have a vaccination clinic scheduled for the 22nd at OCCC. And currently we have over 100 inmates signed up for the vaccination. Not sure how many will actually take the shot, but the 100 was, the list was compiled last week. So we expect there be more than 100 that will be signing up for the vaccination.
Max, are the inmates at Saguaro also entitled to the $50?
Yes, but the 2,500 is statewide. Everybody currently in our custody that received the vaccination between March 3rd and present, the two shots or the single Johnson & Johnson.
I'm sorry, I misunderstood you. You said statewide. I'm asking about Saguaro.
Statewide and Arizona included.
Okay, thank you.
Let the commission know that DHERD recently issued a requirement on all new hires to be vaccinated effective October 15th. The department has already put into place new hires being vaccinated. We started off with ACOs and deputy sheriffs. Chapman settlement, the agreement monitoring panel conducted their site tours of all 8 correctional facilities last week. And currently awaiting their recommendations. That's all I have for vaccination.
And Max, I would I'm just taking a guess here, but I would suppose whatever that panel recommends will be submitted to the court, and it's really up to the court to decide when to release that report.
Yes, the panel will be making the recommendations to the court. And I believe all findings, all the reports are considered confidential at this point.
Okay, thank you.
Max, Mike here, can you hear me?
No, I can hear you.
I gotta say this gently. I understand that people take the vaccine or they have a medical exception. The religious one is a live issue before the courts, the federal courts. You saw what happened in Washington State. Our position is if there's a religious exemption, you review it or do you automatically grant it?
We review it.
Yeah, and I think that bears careful scrutiny because I think the federal judge here is going to be ruling on it sooner than later.
Yeah, it's for the state employees at this time, you know, it's reviewed. There is no vaccine mandates for inmates at this point.
Any other questions from the commissioners for Max at this time? Max, it's to have you here on just a few questions that was brought up earlier, and you know, the monitoring of your medical services in Seguro, specifically during this pandemic, when the offenders are asking for whether or not they may have the virus or whatever medical conditions they arise. Is there oversight on Seguro's medical procedures from the Department of Public Safety?
There is. We have the on-site monitor as well as medical staff from our department goes out on quarterly audits. Any complaints regarding medical should be addressed to our department so we can follow it to the mainland branch to take a look at what deficiencies they're complaining about.
And those audits that are conducted by public safety teams, are do they include medical personnel?
Yes, we send out nursing administrators to conduct these audits.
State employees,
and I think even our medical director did the last one, I guess.
Would you be able to share when your last one was and your next one is?
Our last audit was last month. August was the last audit they conducted. It's quarterly audit, so August, September. I think November would probably be the next trip.
So those trips are still happening even though the pandemic's going on, yeah?
Yeah, we're required to do the audits, so you know, staff that are vaccinated are allowed to conduct the audits. If they're not vaccinated, they're not allowed to travel.
Those audit reports, I don't know if Ted and Martha can help me with this question. Are they, or can we review as a commission?
They should be public.
Okay. I'm going to follow up on my side. And Lisa, I don't know if you know the answer to that right off the bat, but that may be something, commissioners, that we may want to look at to see how public safety is looking at the medical situations in Seguro, as well as the system as well. Any comments on that, Martha? I know you did audits before.
Yeah, no, I don't have any comments on it.
Okay. I just want to think as a commission, if we can have access to those documents, we can have better answers for the community when they ask us these questions about medical concerns in our facilities or specifically in Arizona, Lisa. So it's just really whether or not the commission can have or have the ability to view the quarterly audits of the Arizona overall contract with the state of Hawaii.
I have another question. Max, we do pay for a monitor on site, correct? That is paid by the state of Hawaii?
Yes.
And how often do they submit reports?
I would have to go back.
Because I would like us also to have access to those reports.
Sure. Mark, just to clarify, the audit team that goes down consists of more than just medical. There's food service, programs, security, gang intelligence.
Program staff, people staff.
Yeah. So, yeah. They do a wide range of audits.
That's really where this line of questioning was coming from, Max. I recall being part of those teams 20 years ago in Oklahoma and Mississippi. So I'm just curious to see where they're probably way more advanced than we were 20 years ago. And I just want to see how the instrument looks like right now and how the contractor is faring in their responsibilities with our population.
Mark, can I jump in?
Go ahead, Mike.
Max, I'm sure you know this, but when I was on the Parole Commission, Fred Hune took us down for like 5 days, and we had 40 parole hearings there, and the entire team went from public safety. I was really impressed. Gang intelligence, medical, the whole crew. I don't think I saw a report because I wasn't in that loop. Now we're in the loop, so I think we got to get the report. Were you aware that the parole board went down and had something like 40 hearings?
Yes, I'm aware. And I think they were planning on going again this year, but because of pandemic, they had to shut down.
Well, I was impressed, and I saw things that I looked at it with fresh and generally positive eyes. Maybe they put on just a really nice face for us, but it was a good deal. But I didn't see a report at the end. But thank you.
Max, you were going to say something else?
No, I just said that the parole board was planning on going to Arizona again this year, 2020. I think it was this year or next year, but because of the pandemic, it was delayed. I think it was this year, 2020.
Okay, commissioners, just an end to this discussion on the agenda 3, unless you have any more questions. An actionable item for us in our upcoming annual report to the legislature, and as Carrie Ann shared, how we need to start communicating with the legislature is really informing them. Yeah, that the purpose that what the commission did in its capacity report, yeah, Martha, is really the reflection on what the facility needs to do to control the virus. So any emergency disease control based on CDC recommendations.
Yes, that's what we use our guideline for doing the emergency capacity report.
Yeah. And so that was the commission's action in terms of helping or giving some leverage for PSD to reduce their numbers, yeah, so that they can deal effectively with controlling the virus within the facilities. Now, whether or not that happened, that's up to discussion at this particular point. I'm bringing that up because that's the document that we're going to use when we go back into the legislature to say, this is what we said, this wasn't done, this is why you had these issues, this is why you have a lawsuit. Okay, so whether you paid in the front end or the back end, you're paying. Yeah. So my last thought right now is, now that we're planning for our oversight coordinator, we need to begin to think about what an audit instrument for us looks like. Yeah. So as soon as that oversight coordinator is on board, there's no doubt in my mind that we will be sending them into the facilities as our eyes and ears, and to look at the concerns that have been brought to us within the last year and a half. Okay. I'm going to say that now until we get some kind of report at what the federal lawsuit is dealing with and handling. And as everyone knows, we have no control over that. That's a separate issue and moving on its own until it becomes public. But that's a thought that we want to start thinking about, is how our oversight authority through our oversight coordinator, will be entering into these facilities come January and February to conduct audits for the commission. Any thoughts?
I think that our audits are going to be very different, but again, there are a lot of people nationally that are already conducting these type of audits of oversight commissions. So we will be looking at how they conduct their audits to help guide us and help us come up with our design. We're just not there yet, Mark. We don't have enough information.
But Mark, if I could add,
I agree with Martha. I don't see the oversight commissioner, the coordinator, conducting audits. Audits is kind of a term of art. It's a specific process that people use looking for, checking on specific things. But I think the what the statute requires is that we conduct investigations. Now, if an audit is needed, I think we should be able to commission an independent audit, although we don't have any funds. So I think one of the things we should keep in mind, what we should be discussing is what are going to be the priorities for the coordinator? What are the limitations? And if there are limitations, for example, if the coordinator believes some independent person should come in to follow up, how can we do that? And that might be a budget thing. So what I guess what I'm saying is it's time we take a look at our budget that we want to propose to the legislature. We might want to start building stuff like that in.
No, there's no doubt. And thank you for the clarification, Ted. As really, you know, as part of a starting discussion, you're right. You know, I may have misused the word audit, but it's really now that, you know, we there is a clear vision of a potential of an oversight coordinator. We really start want to think about how we utilize that person. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Well said. Okay. Update on the new OOL Community Correctional Center development on agenda item number 3-4.
Mark, as you know, I did meet with Max. That was discussed at the last meeting that I've been meeting with Max. So I met with him, it's almost 3 weeks ago now. And he informed me, well, he's in a better position to say it, but what he informed me is that the request for information stage is winding down. And that's the one that the current consultants are involved with. The next step is gonna be a request for qualifications, and there'll be a new set of consultants. So at this exact point in that process, I'm not quite sure how we would infuse ourselves. I don't believe that we have anything to do with requests for qualifications because that's reviewing technical things, but I may be wrong and Ted might be able to expand on that. And also Max, expand on it.
Well, I would think that before you make a request for qualifications, you need to have a clear understanding as to what kind of consultant you're looking for. For example, if you have already decided that there are going to be X number of beds, you look for somebody who with the design qualifications. But if the RFP is going to be more flexible than that, to do a review and get community input to identify the number of beds that are really needed, then you're gonna, it might be a slightly different set of qualifications that you're looking for. So the real key is when you do an RFP, what are you looking for? And I think that's kind of up in the air right now. I shouldn't say that. I should say that we don't know what the department will be looking for at this time.
And I believe that Bettina is on the, Bettina, are you there?
I am.
Okay.
Hello, everybody.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
This stage, the request for information, there will be a final report on that, correct?
Actually, the RFI, as you pointed out correctly, that's the request for information, that is completed. This is the initial stage in this process, and its goal is to solicit feedback and kind of gauge interest in the design and development industry. You might remember that we sent that out. Let me see. I'm looking for a date here. January 29th of this year. That's actually when that went out. And we had a deadline of March 12th. And by that date, we had received 22 responses. That is a very, very good response. That is solid. Healthy. It shows that there is interest and capacity. And from my perspective, there's some passion there. It was great, really great turnout. There were reports that summarized this, and they are on the OCCC website. I can go and put the link to that material into the chat if you like me to. You are correct. The RFQ or the request for qualifications, that is the next step. That is the tool that is based on qualifications submitted by the developer. So that typically includes credentials, project experience, like what was said here earlier, making sure you have a team that really knows what they are doing. The publication of the RFQ is anticipated for the first quarter of 2022. So this next year, early next year. First quarter. And then that third step is the RFP. That's the request for proposals. And that is where ultimately the team that develops, well, not develops, the team that builds the facility is selected. That's still a bit off. So this next step is getting the RFQ out, and hopefully that will be in early 2022, like really early 2022.
Bettina, the link that you said that you're, and I'm glad you're gonna put it up there, does that include a summary of the 22 responses?
I believe so.
Martha, can we follow up with you? Because I think that's very important that the community know what the comments were that were submitted.
Some of that, I will get back to you definitely. Some of that is, you know what? Short answer, yes, I will put this out there. Carrie Ann, she wrote us asking when in early 2022. That is part of our current contract. That would be first quarter, like I said.
Bettina.
Go ahead, Ted.
Bettina, from your experience, what kind of timeline can we anticipate for the project? So if you put up the RFQ, say in January, like you mentioned, how long does the RFQ stay out there? How long does it process it? How long before the state will be in a position to issue an RFP? How long does the RFP take? All the way down. What kind of time frame are we looking at?
Oh, that.
I'm not asking you to predict it. Just your best guess, I guess.
An RFQ. Really only takes a few months. The The RFP will most likely be around a year. I am a little bit hesitant here because I know the media is listening. And I am making statements that are truly my best guess based on what I know right now.
Right. Yeah, I'm just asking for a typical situation.
Yes. And the what's important here too is that the RFP that I mentioned is the develops the bridging documents that are then being given to the developer. So that would happen during that time.
So it would be developing the bridging documents as well as obtaining, procuring the services of a developer itself?
The bridging documents would be needed by a developer to be able to say what it would cost and what it would take to develop the project.
So would the RFP be for the bridging documents or for the whole package, the bridging documents plus the development of the facility?
The RFP would be for the bridging documents, the way I understand it right now.
Is this some... is the intent right now, as far as you know, to do design build or design build finance, or how? What's the state's intent on how to proceed with this project?
The way forward, the way it looks right now, would be a P3. So that would be public private partnership. That is. Based on the business case analysis that was performed about a year ago, that was the preferred method, the financially most attractive to the state. And it was also what the governor announced would be how the procurement method for that project.
So it would be design, build, finance.
Design, build, finance, and maintain. What's really important here is that it does not include operate. On similar projects and in other places, the operation of the facility is often part of the negotiation. In this case here, that is not the case. The operation will continue to be part of the state. So it's in no way handed over to a different entity. It will stay here in Hawaii.
Good. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And Bettina, I just want to clarify the RFQ, the people who submit to that, whoever pass it, they're the ones eligible to apply for the RFP, correct?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. And that's the reason you have the RFQ.
Yeah. The RFQ is also quite helpful because it gauges what firms have the capacity and the interest right now to pursue the project.
Okay. And at that time, your organization's contract, Architects Hawaii, ends with this phase before it goes into the RFQ, or do you develop the RFQ?
We are developing the RFQ, and then our contract ends. Yes.
Thank you.
You are welcome.
Oops.
Can we work on our mutes, ladies and gentlemen? Unless that was a supporter for the moratorium. Whoever has the dog barking, thank you. So thank you for that, Bettina. Max, did you want to add anything? I heard you, your voice. You still here?
No, I think Bettina did a good job in covering everything for us. Thank you.
Thank you, Bettina.
Mark, I have another question.
Go ahead, Ted.
A few meetings ago, the meeting in which we reviewed Curtis Pulitzer's report on a population projections, you might recall that this is a report that said that if certain reforms were enacted, that we can expect a lower population for the new OCCC. And at that meeting, we requested an analysis of how does this translate into dollars. I wonder if the department or the consultant can provide that kind of information. For example, I think it's at something like 200 beds that we could reduce the size of the facility by about 200 beds. What does this mean in terms of dollars? I think that would be good information for not only us, but the legislature to have. So I'd like to renew that request for that information.
Bear with me, Ted, I'm writing down.
Oh, we will run this past DAGS and our consultants and see if we can get an answer for you at the next meeting.
Thank you, Max.
Okay, I'm still hearing some back feed, ladies and gentlemen. If you guys can mute yourselves, please, so the commissioners can continue to have their discussions. Now, when we look at the everything that's being said about this item on our agenda concerning OCCC, and I'll kind of bring this to a close. There's the issue of building the facility itself. Yeah.
Remain muted until the question and answer session. You have the opportunity.
Can you mute everybody else, please?
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out how to do that real quick. Sorry.
Presentation by typing your questions into the chat.
Okay. Whoever's talking right now about typing the questions into the chat room, please mute yourself.
Okay.
Tony Bisson.
Yeah. Tony. Okay, where's my train of thought? Okay, so there's other things that are going on right now that help us understand how to reducing the numbers. Okay, so Representative Ganigan is currently working with a group of individuals that are on the revision of the bail reform. Okay. So that's one thing that we're looking at as we go into this legislative session on revisiting the bail reform with the Senate and the House to affect the numbers that will be going into this new facility. So that's one. The second question, and I've had asked some faith organizations that are supporting the no bail reform have come in and had discussions with me. And I posed the question to them that when we want to look at stopping the jail, we need to look at as passionately, and you folks heard me say this, is what is the alternative? Okay. What is the alternative to the jail? What is the alternative when we say no cash bail reform? Okay. One of the success in the juvenile justice system in the reduction of the incarcerated population was giving the judges alternatives to incarceration. Okay, so when we don't put someone in a jail, it does not solve the problem. The problem is a social issue on why they're getting into the jail or why they're committing their crimes. It's a problem of safety versus nuisance. Yeah. And so where are we providing the alternative for the passion we want in not building the jail? What do we do with the individuals that are that we are talking about that are occupying those beds that they don't need to be in? Yeah, and that's a more serious
comment on that.
Go ahead.
I disagree with you a bit on that, and yeah. That is my concern is that bail affects impoverished people. very much because they cannot make it. And so it's more a class thing. Who's getting incarcerated and is it based on they just don't have the ability to pay, as opposed to the particular behavior that they're doing.
That still doesn't, what I'm trying to get at is really, what do you do?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, keeping them out of jail is an easy answer. If the behavior continues, we haven't solved the problem. Yeah. So all I'm saying is it's money that's not going to be spent on them in jail. Are there community interventions available to receive those funding?
And yeah, we should be supporting things that will help prevent people from having interactions with the police in the first place, you know, that instead it'll be mental health providers responding instead of police responding.
Yeah. There's or simply put, where the police can defer and refer. Yeah, and that happens all the time. If the police, as well as the judges, has alternatives, they normally will go with the alternative.
Mark.
Go ahead.
Perhaps Lisa could help us. I'm trying to do legal research here on my iPhone. Henry Humphrey, H-U-M-P-H-R-E-Y, 7-0, unanimous California Supreme Court. Didn't do away with cash bail, but it came within an eyelash of doing it. And I think the trend nationally is doing away with cash bail because it discriminates against poor people and all of just exactly what Martha said. So we need to get ready for that. And we can't wish it away. And I think it's a wise decision. Representative Gannett is all over this. We at the law school are all over this. So, and I know the bail bondsmen are not happy, but California Supreme Court left a little running room there, but not much. So I encourage everybody to read that 7-0. When do judges in California agree unanimously on anything? Only here. So I commend it to you. Henry Humphrey, can you help us with that, Lisa? I think Lisa went to court, so we'll get
I'm back. If you want, I can send a copy to the commissioners, email a copy to the commissioners and see.
Yes, and cite it in the chat if you don't mind.
Okay.
Thank you.
Those were my final comments for thought and process. When we look at changing from a punitive system to a therapeutic system, we have yet to describe the therapeutic system or put more thought into it. We want to end a punitive system. But how do we begin the process of transitioning into a therapeutic? The alternatives that I'm speaking of is the therapeutic journey. Yeah, that's the thought process at this particular time. I'm having multiple discussions on ending incarceration at the adult and the juvenile level, and ending incarceration, it can be a very passionate movement, but there needs to be an alternative system so that we can help with the social issues that are providing these be it poverty or just be it other things as well. Okay. That's the thought process that we should begin to put ourselves in. So with that being said, let's move on to item number 5. Ted, you want to take this up? And you have any further questions from the reports on the containers?
Yes, I do. I just want to mention that for those who are not aware, members of the public, the commission sent a letter to the department asking for information regarding the containers that are being proposed or actually are already there at various facilities. And we got a response from the department. And the purpose of our letter and our interest is because as a commission, we are responsible for setting population limits, maximum population limits at each facility. And we'd like to explore what the limits are gonna be or the capacities are gonna be for these containers. And in our capacity setting, We look at physical space and we look at a variety of other factors. And so the department did respond promptly. And unfortunately, we haven't been able to follow up. But I just want to say, first of all, that there are further questions that I think the commission should be asking. But my question right now is where are we on the container itself? This is for Max. Have you found a placement for them?
What do you mean, where are we on the containers?
Are you using the containers? And if you have a timeline for using the containers?
We haven't started using the containers yet. We're still, I think the closest to using the containers is probably at MCCC at this time. They have one container there. We're still waiting locks, yeah.
Correction grade locks, and then the completion of the water and sewer hookups. So Maui's facility, Marcus is telling, is the closest to being ready to go. The next is OCCC. They have their three containers and they're almost finished. MCCC container is in. Kauai's container. Kauai is hooking up theirs as well. We still have a few more on order, but none of them are in use now. And so we're clear, these would be medical containers, and medical would then order the person into isolation to use the containers.
Well, are they gonna be used, when you say medical containers, my impression is that they're gonna be used for quarantine purposes?
Correct.
When we talk about quarantine, are we talking about inmates who may have been exposed, or are we talking about new admissions or a combination?
We're talking about first, medical would order someone into isolation if they were positive. Quarantine is if they were close contact.
So there might be some inmates who have tested positive.
Correct. That was the original purpose. For inmates who tested positive, they would be, medical could order them into isolation, and that's where they would be, because the containers are self-contained.
Okay, that would be something a shade different from quarantine. But if an inmate tests positive, I would assume that you would look for a site within each facility that would be immediately accessible to the medical unit.
That is correct, and that's what we're doing now, following our pandemic plan. But because of infrastructure limitations, as you know, the facilities are older, we can't always, depend on the number of people who test positive or in quarantine, we can't always separate them to the degree that we should. So the containers were ordered early last year, if I'm not mistaken, and just started arriving recently, so that the medical would have options if someone came up positive to order them to isolation.
Okay, so I guess some of the questions that I still have really would be impacted by the specific placement, and there would be things like monitoring of the inmates, staff placement. So inmates can be constantly monitored, actually, especially if they've tested positive. Communication between the inmates and staff from their cells, how much out of cell time they're going to have, a number of questions along this line.
Okay, why don't you write them up and then send them to Mac, and we'll be glad to take a look at them and get them back to you as soon as we can. And that way you can share that with the commission members.
Yeah, because I want to say that my fear is that if you have quarantine, if you use the containers and they're outside of the regular facility and you don't have staff placed there, they could easily be forgotten.
No, I think that's not the case, Ted. If we, once medical ordered someone to isolation, we would then have a post set up right there where the containers are, which are inside the fence on most of the facilities and only outside the fence on like Kauai. And Maui's inside the fence. Kauai's the only one that's outside the fence, if I'm not mistaken. So we would then have a post set up there where the person would be regularly monitored. Healthcare would also do their normal checks they would do. They would just do it in a container, not necessarily in the normal housing unit.
security. Okay.
So I think we need a lot of clarification on that. If they're going to be used for quarantine purposes, then it's going to be a different story in terms of capacity setting. So we'll put something in writing and get it to you.
We're not increasing the bed capacity of the facility with these containers. These are just temporary housing to address.
Well, we understand that, but it's still, you're not increasing the official capacity, but in reality, the capacity is going to be increased.
It's not permanent housing capacity we're talking about.
Not permanent, but total housing will be increased.
That's correct, but the key to remember for the commission and the public is this is for the health and safety of the inmates that test positive and are those that need to be quarantined so that we can protect the other inmates and staff in the facility from getting infected.
We fully understand that, Tommy. To be honest with you, a year and a half ago when we saw your pandemic response plans, my personal feeling was there was no way that you folks could comply with your plans because of the limitations of the facility. So I'm not trying to say that you shouldn't use the containers. What I'm trying to say is if you're gonna use the containers, you have to use it in a particular manner. And I think that's our interest.
Fair enough. We would appreciate any recommendations that you folks may have also as far as how we can use these containers appropriately.
Certainly.
Thank you, Max. Thank you, Ted. We'll continue to follow up with that agenda item. As we move forward, Martha, you want to take over the next two agenda items?
Well, the review of the intake service centers, again, this is a result of my meeting with Max. And I asked, the intake service center has the responsibility to review all those people who are arrested and coming into our facilities and before they come into our facility, see who can be diverted from the facility. And that is a very important role in trying to keep down the number of people who are admitted. So I asked that for the Oahu only intake service center, so it's starting on one, if he can help us find out what their activity is and how effective they are. And this is a very quick review. So what I asked him specifically, and I'm taking this from the email, please provide data broken down by pretrial misdemeanors and pretrial felons for a recent month period, and I listed August or September, to include the number of persons reviewed at the cell block, number of bail reports submitted for consideration at first appearance, number granted pretrial release at first appearance, by what kind, so owner cognizant, supervised release, bail, et cetera. And for those who are committed to incarceration, number of bail studies conducted during the first month of incarceration, number of pretrial persons released as a result by type of release and average length of stay. And then I put additional information to indicate for the month selected, the number of pretrial admissions, number of pretrial releases, and average length of stay broken down by pretrial misdemeanor and pretrial felon. And so this was forwarded to Max, and I presume that Max or Frank Young maybe might be presenting this information.
Okay, let me just do the pretrial misdemeanors first.
Okay.
So there were 200, this is for the month of August, and this only pertains to Oahu Intake Service Center. For the month of August, we had 214 pretrial misdemeanors that were reviewed at the cell block. We did 214 pretrial bail reports for these misdemeanors. Of these misdemeanors, 48 the judges released. So there were 40 that were released on ROR and 8 that were released on SR. There were 45 that were admitted to OCCC and 122 that pled out at their initial court appearance. I know there's a difference of about 7 inmates at this time that they're looking into, but that is the situation with the pretrial misdemeanors. average length of stay for pretrial misdemeanors were 29 days, just shy of a month. As far as the felons, we had for the month of August, 137 pretrial felons admitted into OCCC, and we conducted 106 bail reports. Of that, 15 were released on SR. Average length of stay for pretrial felon was listed at 77 days.
So at the cell block review, there are no pretrial felons reviewed, only pretrial misdemeanors?
Yeah, each ISC does it differently based on the initial court appearance. Oahu does not do pretrial bail reports on the initial appearance from each PD.
Okay, and then for the last thing I had for the overall system, for the month of August, well, I guess you did give us how many were admitted, yeah, and how many were released. Of the 137 pretrial felons that were admitted, you said 15 were released on SR. Do you know if any others bailed out during that period of time?
I don't have that information.
I don't know where to go from here. I mean, we need to be continually collecting information and knowing about this population. The Intake Service Center is the department's number one way to prevent people from coming into the jails in the first place. And that's why I wanted to follow up on that. And I'm not thinking clearly right now, I'm sorry. We need to follow up some more. So I'll be getting in touch with you. But commissioners, other comments?
I have a question. I think I'd be interested, Martha, in knowing why certain defendants, especially misdemeanors, are not released. That's number one. And related to that, Max, I don't know if you folks would know how many inmates are held pretrial pending fitness exams, because that's something that not only impacts their admission, but also the length of stay. And that's something you have no control over.
Yes.
But that would implicate other parts of the system.
Again, I'm not sure if we have that information readily available to pull up, but we can see if we have that.
Okay, thank you.
I will try and get more orderly about this, Max. I'm sorry, I'm just, I got brain fog right now. But this is something I'd like to have us get reports on a regular basis if other commissioners agree with that.
I agree. And I had an add-on later, Ked or Kavika, about therapeutic model.
Mark, can I say one more thing?
Go ahead, Max. Thank you.
Just wanted to update you folks on Act 179, the review of the pretrial population. So this assignment, after the Supreme Court decision, we decided that, you know, maybe a more formal way of doing business needs to be done. So this assignment was tasked to the Intake Service Center. Managers at each island, each county is working with their respective judges to determine the format and the process. It is likely that a spreadsheet will be provided to the courts on the 90-day review, listing the contacts that were made with the inmate and if any significant changes were made. And Oahu plans to submit their first report by the end of this month.
Okay.
I believe HISD, Big Island, did one in summer of a review of approximately 150. There were about, I would say, maybe three that had any significant changes for the courts to consider.
And based on our discussion, Max, it appears that housing is one of the biggest barriers.
Housing is one of the biggest barriers out there, but there's also issues that need to be addressed, such as medical and mental health situation, you know, treatment in the community that needs to be provided in order for the courts to feel comfortable.
And so again, it appears to be extra criminal items as opposed to the crime they committed. It's that they don't have mental health treatment, they don't have housing, they have substance abuse problems. And again, public safety is being asked to address all of those things and resolve all of those things. One of the comments we just got from Daniel on the Big Island is that he said, as far as he knows, the West Hawaii Intake Service Center currently has no staff.
Is that correct?
That's correct.
No, that's not correct, correct.
I'm sorry, I can't hear you, Tommy.
That's not correct.
They have staff.
They have staff.
They have staff.
For sure. Kelsey is the administrator out there. They are
so
sure.
They're helping. They're helping with the arrestees that go before the district judges on the west side of the island.
Right. And so we're in active recruitment to fill one of the case managers' positions, a secretary position, and a clerical position that recently became vacant because of retirements.
And how many positions does that ISC usually have? You just mentioned three you're requesting to fill.
I have it in front of me. I think the total number is like six or seven. So they are down quite a bit. But we are recruiting to fill those positions. But if you want the exact numbers, I'll give it to Max and he can get that to you.
Yeah. Okay.
We're also sending staff from Hilo over to assist on certain days.
So they're accompanying the inmates when they go over?
No.
This is pre-admission. Yeah.
So the ISC staff from the Hilo office drives over to Kona to assist on certain days that, you know, high volume days.
Okay.
Part of the problem, so the commission will know, is at one point the legislature had defunded 298.5 positions we had vacant. And so because they defunded the positions, we were scrambling to find money to prioritize to fill some of those vacant positions. We just recently got approval to move forward with filling those vacancies. And so we're doing active recruitment to fill the vacant position.
So they defunded you, but did not, the positions are still in existence, but they're just not funded.
Correct.
Okay. I'll follow up. I'll work with the commissioners and come with a more structured report that we would request on a monthly basis on the activities of ISCs. And that would be statewide, Max, not just for Oahu, okay?
Martha, while we're on reports real quick, our audit reports are posted online so you can see them. I just noticed the most recent one wasn't there. So I called Howard and told him, make sure the report is posted. That was the one, the audit took place in September, not August, as I mentioned earlier. I apologize for that. And in addition, we do receive monthly reports from our contract monitor on the ground, and we recently provided a whole slew of them to Cat Brady a few months ago, and we provide those same reports. We had to be redacted to the commission.
Okay, we'd appreciate that. Why aren't those reports put on your website?
I'll find out. I think because we had to redact them out first, and to be honest with you, I think it just the department never thought about putting it up there. So we'll consult with the Attorney General's office, and whatever we can post, redacted or not, we'll post them online. We'll put whatever we can online, for sure.
Well, this is kind of tongue in cheek. If you're able to respond to Kat and provide them to her, I don't know why you can't provide them to everybody.
I just said I would provide you those same redacted reports if you'd like. But if we're going to post them, we can post them. I'll check with the AD on it. I think we can post a redacted version since we released them.
Yeah. And we may be asking for unredacted versions in the future, given our mandate. And of course, we would keep those confidential.
Thank you, Martha. So that was a great discussion. And
okay, the next thing, the status of the inmate IDs. You want me to cover that?
I'm just going to end with a thought on that item six.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, really about when we talk about ending the jail and ending the no cash bail, understanding the profile of that individual that we're looking at, that particular population that's coming through, that we're targeting, that has no reason or rhyme to be in the jail situation or in incarceration situation, is really truly trying to understand the profile. Yeah, what we're accomplishing here and the discussion you had with Max is showing us this particular group now, and hopefully we can kind of narrow it down to the issues, yeah, that we're having, and truly what are the alternatives for that group, so we can begin to have a visual of what that journey to incarceration looks like, and how do we begin to take it apart, yeah, from that punitive system to the therapeutic system. So I think this is a good beginning of information gathering, and when we have our oversight coordinator, it can really clarify and condense our focus on that individual.
I really believe that the intake service center has the potential of having significant impact on reducing the pretrial population. And Tommy did talk about reduction in funds impacting that, but I really think we need to look at it in a different way and come up with recommendations as to how we can build up ISC so that it is far more effective in diverting people from incarceration.
No doubt, no doubt.
Thank you so Mark, much. Can I say something?
Go ahead, Ron.
Okay, I haven't been saying much, I've been listening. And certainly when I sat as a criminal court judge, the ISC, as far as the first appearance before a court, people lands in jail either before coming to court when arrested by the police, grand jury indictments, on view arrest. And the ISC used to go, at least in the West Side, which we really were proud when we used to go to the judicial conferences, because the West Side, the corner office, the ISC used to go to the jail early in the morning and then prepare a bail study. And so when the defendant made its first appearance, an arraignment and plea in court, the judge would have the bail study with recommendations. And so, we can't do anything, well, you can, before we come to court, because the chief of police by statute sets the bail for misdemeanors. So, before court, they're in jail, it's because the chief of police set the bail for misdemeanors pursuant to statutory authority. Now, when they come to court at the arraignment and plea, we, the judge, get the bail study prepared by ISC. And, the judge looks at it and gives great weight on the bail study. I used to question the bail study because at that time when I was on the bench, the bail study never did address financial ability to pay. Basically, they adjust different criteria. So I always used to ask, well, if they're indigent, how can they pay the bail? And that was always my concern. But the bail study is paramount for the judge's decision. And without the bail study, the judge is basically, what are they going to make the decision on? Is basically, you got the arguments made by the prosecutor, why they should be kept in jail for this bail, or in the defense making arguments why they should go out. But along with address as far as alternative, the bail study would address the alternative to cash bail, sending out to a rehab program and other things like pending the trial. But this all comes in the bail study. Lots of defense attorney would say, well, can my client go to, drug rehabilitation pending the trial and things like that? And certainly the court then would look at, if the bail study addressed it. And for the judges that may want to be cautious about things, they'll say, well, let's continue this. And in the meantime, the defendant remains in jail and come back and see if there's other lesser intrusive alternative rather than just the cash bail. But so in summary, unless there's statutory changes, number one, that would mandate the judges or the police chief to set bail in accordance with statute. Unless there is a statutory change, the statute would still continue. Secondly, even if there's statutory changes, unless the judge's philosophy on bail, because if you think about it, the final decision for bail setting that is not addressed by statute rests with the court. And even if there's statute, the judge will interpret the statute anyway. So what we have to do, which I keep saying, is we got to go to, you know, the judicial side and try to, you know, there's such thing as judicial independence. You know, certainly judges go in court, they listen to the facts, the evidence, they make up the decision based on the law and the evidence. And certainly, you know, how you're going to do that is basically present the judges with you know, facts and circumstances. And certainly I change as a sitting judge throughout the years, like we all change as we gain more experience, as we learn about the system and life in general to make the appropriate decision, such as, look, you know, $100 to a rich person is a drop in the bucket compared to, you know, a person that doesn't have a job who is homeless. And so, you know, it's basically, you can't do a cookie cutter approach. And certainly the easiest way, statutory reform, no cash bail for certain nonviolent low-level criminal offenses. That's my softbox.
And Ron, your relationship with ISC, I presume it was a good relationship?
Oh, yeah, yeah. In fact, the Third Circuit, we were really happy with the ISC folks, basically. And, you know, such as I give credit to them, they go in early in the morning because the AMPs is like 9 o'clock and they have to type a bill study, you know, go in jail early in the morning at the police station and then do the study and then come to court. And we're, you know, yes. And they were very good. And, you know, Max, I'm glad you folks are feeling it and hopefully you can continue. If it's not, I haven't spoken to the chief judge here in the Third Circuit about whether they are getting bail studies before the arraignment and plea, but I hope they would be getting the study. Because then, Martha, like you said, you know, judges need something to make the decision on. And, you know, bail study is all there.
Mark, can I say one thing?
Go ahead, Max.
Okay, you know, ISC tries their best to divert as much people as possible. But the problem is that if you're going to divert them from jail, they're going to need a place to be diverted to. And you know, our department has been partnering with the Honolulu Prosecutor's Office and DOH, and they have this thing called Cage Aid, which is supposed to help divert pretrial offenders, including felons, to treatment. But they actually come into OCCC and it's just the process of getting them out again and being accepted, having a residential bed to go to. You know, the process is very lengthy. So again, you know, there is a need for development of more resources in the community. I'm not against bail reform, but you know, we have to address some of these issues in the community. Thank you.
And Mark, let me just, maybe I should have started with the premise. What is the purpose of bail? Bail is not to, as we say, as in the statute, someone pointed out, not to punish the poor who cannot make the bail amount. Bail in whatever form is to assure, number one, the defendant who is charged with a crime, not yet convicted, to make his or her court's appearance. Number two, public safety. So number one, you know, the ISC go, and number two, the public safety analysis is basically, you know, what would assure a defendant coming to court? You know, that's the concern. And number two, if there's a public safety issue, then the person should not be released. Oftentimes, bail is used as subterfuge to keep the person in jail pending trial because the prosecutor or whoever the agency does not present the court with evidence that would show the defendant is a threat to the community or to the public. Once the prosecutor shows that, basically the judge said, well, you're in, no bail. Because if you think about it, high bail, which keeps an indigent in, and you know, that's, let's call a spade, and that's what is the practical effect is. Basically, you know, the person can't post the money, person's in jail. Well, and the prosecutor would argue, well, the person's a danger to the community. But if you think about it, if this poor person at that point cannot post the money, somehow post the bail, then it's really, you know, I say a fraud to the community, because he said, well, this person's in jail for $1 million and he or she is not going out and the community is safe because of $1 million bail. Well, in theory, that money can be posted and the person will go out. Then what? Prosecutor goes in for a higher bail again, try to keep him in. In fact, the process should be from the beginning, the person's a threat to the community, no bail from the beginning. So if you look at the purpose of bail, is really to assure, number one, to assure defendant will appear in court, or number two, to protect the public in a no bail matter.
You know, we know from data from the past in Hawaii and throughout the United States, among the homeless population, among the mentally ill, that they often have a long list of warrants out for them because they don't show up, as Ron was just saying, and that's the purpose of bail, to have them show up. And I'm gonna say again, I grew up in New York. I remember the beginning of the Vera Institute in the 1960s, and they started as a pretrial diversion project. And so what they did is they went out and they reminded people of when their hearings were. They knew what they would, kept searching for them, and they actually sent vans out to pick people up and bring them to court, because often transportation to court was a hindrance to getting there. On the Big Island, that could be a real problem, not being able to get to court because you don't have a car and you don't have a ride.
Yeah, on the Big Island, I know the public defender used to go down to the beaches all the time, sometimes to look for their clients, to talk to their clients. But, you know, I guess the alternative is basically, if they don't have a home, you know, find out where they can be contacted. And certainly, you know, I don't think, frankly, you can provide housing for all the defendants who are homeless, number one, because we're having a hard time even providing housing with people who are not defendants. You know, so there has to be other options as to assure the defendant would come to court. It's a, like, for example, now I think the judiciary is looking this way. For certain crimes, traffic or whatever, they have cell phones. They have automatic reminders. Yeah, you got to come to court. And certainly, you know, the Access to Justice Commission is looking at these things too, like providing, hey, let's give the bus schedules to people that in Honolulu, especially public transportation, let's give them bus schedule. When they come to courts, they know which bus to take and things like that. But the bottom line is jail is not the answer for these type of people.
Thank you, Ron. Thank you, Martha. That was a great discussion and more insight into where direction we need to move. Thank you so much. Martha, you want to move on to the next item?
Yes, the status of the Inmate ID Project. Someone had brought to my attention, they were under the impression that the Department of Public Safety had in its possession the ability to print IDs. And so I brought it up with Max, and Max said that Tommy has been successful in getting some MOAs to affect this, but I'll turn it over to Max so he can give you the status of this project this time.
Okay, I have Tommy here that will give you the status, but I'll let you know that we're submitting a legislative proposal this year regarding the IDs. The simple language is that the department creates the IDs and we do not create the IDs. We need to
I guess, work with and get approval from DOT. So, you know, it's simple housekeeping language, but Tommy is here and he can update people's status.
And Tommy, it might help if you explain how the process will work, because I think a lot of people don't realize that you folks will not be doing the actual review. It will be Department of Transportation that will be doing the review. Is that correct?
Partially. Let me explain the process first. Okay. We ordered a machine. We're waiting for the machine to come. It's a mobile unit that will be hooked to, that will be hooked up electronically to the Department of Customer Service for the city and county. The inmate, if he or she wants to have an ID card, then they will fill out the appropriate application and get their fingerprints taken. That information will go electronically to the city and county. The city and county will do their verification. And then if there's any issues, they'll kick it back, we'll address it. If they approve the application, we will bring the inmate to the machine, we'll take the picture, and then what will happen is the city and county will actually issue the authorization code to the mobile unit. Mm-hmm. Well, then, and the unit itself then will print out the ID card. So we don't have the ability to issue the ID card. They will be the approval. We just have the mobile unit set up to facilitate the process for those that want the ID card. We do have the MOU in place with the Department of Transportation and the City and County Department of Customer Service. We ordered a machine. We're working with the City and County of Customer Service now to hook up the connectivity so when the machine arrives, then we can have the machine hooked up and ready to go. The ID cards, the Department of Transportation agreed to pay the $3 charge up through October of next year, which time we will then pick up the charge for the ID cards for the inmates that want to get ID card, a state ID card.
Tommy, I'm a little concerned that you said if they want an ID, we're supposed to be supplying them with an ID, because some people may not know to ask for an ID.
No, the question, we can't, maybe I should rephrase it. We can't force them to get an ID card. We'll let them know that the service is available. And for those that want the ID card, express an interest, we will work with them to get the application completed and get the ID card for them. I think that should clarify the issue. Yeah. We can't make them do an ID card.
And I would suggest, Tommy, this is a cover your ass issue, that if someone says, I do not want an ID card, that you have them sign something saying that they have been informed and they have refused it.
That's a good point, Martha. I'll do that, thank you.
Yeah, and another thing that Max told me though, there may be a delay in the machine because of the worldwide shortage on computer chips.
That is correct. So we originally ordered the machine in February, and at that time we weren't informed that there would be a delay, but recently we were informed because of the microchip shortage that there would be a delay in obtaining the machine. And so we're unsure now of when the machine will come in. We ordered the machine. We are holding back on payment until arrival of the machine.
Okay, so, but it's out of your hands right now as to when you can receive the machine. Okay.
So we're taking care of all the connectivity issues. So when the machine does arrive, we're ready to go.
Well, after that law, I think, has been in effect for about 4 years. So congratulations, Tommy, on finally moving it forward.
Thank you. Oh, Tommy. All the blame, too.
This is such a key issue in regards to reentry. Yeah. IDs are represent the opportunity to get Social Security numbers as well as employment opportunities. Yeah, so this is a big, big, big step toward improvement of our reentry system. So thank you, Max and Tommy, for your due diligence in this matter. We can move forward. Thank you for that report, Martha, on the Legislative Public Forum.
Okay, I don't know, there's been comments made about this after I asked to have the agenda amended. But specifically what I was, I have met with Jen Wilbur from the Y. She unfortunately had to leave the meeting, and Nina Key from OHA. And we were talking about doing some type of public forum on the issue of reentry. It is the YWCA that provides the Fernhurst services. And so we were being very specific to focus on that. And after meeting about three times, I really felt we began to flounder. What would we be able to put together in such a short period of time? And I'm not feeling very hopeful that we're going to be able to put something together. Then once I added that to the agenda, then people were bringing in much bigger issues. And that is beyond my consideration, or what we, the three of us, were considering. We were very specific. So I did want to let you know we're having those meetings. And if people have suggestions as to how we can move this forward to have a forum prior to the legislative session, have it in the beginning of January, I would appreciate any information or any mana'o on that. You know, I really felt we were floundering. We weren't getting anywhere.
Okay. Thank you, Martha. Everyone, that's really important. I really would like to have some kind of, you see a lot of the groups coming together prior to the legislation and hosting events and bringing legislators too, so that they can have information and educational opportunities to learn about the issues. And I think it would be a good platform for the Hawaii Correctional Systems Oversight Commission to provide an open forum for our legislators on all the issues that we've been dealing with, the questions that have been coming up at every meeting, and just show them through the commission, the community's concerns at this time. With that being said, you know, there are bills that were presented in the legislature last year that we were unaware of until the legislature opened. So, you know, if we are to lean or move toward a direction of a public forum, if those of you know of these bills that are being written, let us keep us in the loop and give us some insight to what they look like, so we can provide some kind of comments during our mission, our meetings, or see if we can be supportive at all. So, and I heard that question come up earlier in the meeting. So with that being said, any other questions from the commissioners on the public forum that we're, Martha's been working on?
Can I just say another thing? Our goal was to have this for legislators, and it would be for informational purposes to help them move forward legislation that would help with re-entry, but we hadn't really talked about what that legislation would be. And we believe, I mean, when we used to have the Hawaii Correctional Association, every Thursday and Friday before the legislative session, we had our annual conference, and it was very well attended by legislators and their staff. Mm-hmm. And Thursday was the adult day and Friday was the juvenile day. But in accomplishing that, it was because the there was a center at the University School of Social Work, and they supported it. They put the staff support forward to be able to pull this thing together. And that's what we don't have. We don't have the staff support to do it.
Yeah. But we'll continue to work on that, Martha. Thank you. Yeah. With that being said, so our final agenda item, number 8, 9. Any public testimony before we end our meeting?
Mark, I had a segue for Bob. Oh, Bob, you got your hand up. But Bob and I discussed, it's kind of scary when Bob and I talk. We don't always agree, but how often should we be meeting so we move this thing? Because we've been, I want to start fast walking, not slow walking. And the other thing is, what comes up through the community to me is the uniforms that the inmates wear. I was on the parole board when it switched to stripes. I don't know that that's required. I don't know best practices. It strikes me as not therapeutic and not rehabilitative. So I'm just mentioning that, just two things that have come across my radar. Thank you.
Thank you.
One thing I want to say about meeting more often, I think I brought this up before, I have staffed out many committees and commissions during my career. Because as a program specialist, that was one of the things that program specialists would do. And I will say, for the commission to move forward without, it is the staff that makes it possible for commissions to really move forward. And that's what we're lacking. So even if we started meeting twice a month, if we don't have staff to help carry out some of these things, I don't want to meet just to talk, Mike. I'm afraid we'll lose people. And I may be the only one that has that view.
Well, I'm going to meet to get a coordinator sooner than later.
Yes.
That's right.
Yes.
Rob, Bob?
Yeah, very briefly, just a couple of things. I agree with Mike, and we have discussed this, that the, in fact, when I was on the Reentry Commission, I took a strong stand, you know, against the striped uniforms, because the Reentry Commission's philosophy was that reentry should begin on the day they're admitted. Well, on the day they're admitted, we put them into a striped uniform, and that's hardly a way of doing reentry. So I know I may disagree with Ted on that, but anyway, that's my view. I would like to also see the meetings continue at least every 2 weeks. I'm wondering whether there's some way you can get committees that would even deal with specific issues and meet more often. If we could organize that way, I think it'd be very helpful because there's just so many issues facing the commission now that need to be addressed. But the thing I really want to say is the last 45 minutes, we have had a really good discussion about all of the things that we should have been talking about 6 years ago when we started thinking about the jail. And if I'm going to plan a jail, or if you're going to spend my tax money on a jail, I want people like Mark Patterson and Mike Towne and Ronnie Barra and Martha and Ted talking and bringing their collectively 100 years of wisdom about our correctional system into play. When Ron talks about, when you talk about all these, we need alternatives, we shouldn't be talking that about it now. We should have been talking about it 6 years ago. But the point is that it is totally foolish to go forward with a new jail until we have these issues resolved and we have a plan on how we're going to work this whole system, because jails don't exist in a vacuum. They exist as part of a bigger community, and they have to be seen in that context. And we, you know, if anybody has any sense, they would stop this process right now, step back from the brink of issuing an RFP and say, Jesus, let's get the right people together to discuss this. Let's get the input of the community and build a jail that really reflects the values of our community instead of the values of the Lewis Burger Group in New Jersey or some of the other mainland consultants who don't care about our community, who have been the ones who have really been pushing this thing forward. We have time to stop it. We really need to stop it. Not completely, but we need to pull back from the brink and have the very discussions we're having now and include a lot more people, and I can tell you who they are. Thank you. And, you know, Mark, you said this is a passionate issue. Boy, I agree. I feel really passionate about it. We need to stop the jail and start thinking as a community again.
Thank you, Bob. Okay, Kat.
I would just like to remind perhaps Judge Towne and Judge Ibarra can remind other judges that we do have an unsecured bail law that is rarely used. And what it is a promissory note that somebody says they're gonna show up. So why aren't we pushing the judiciary to use that mechanism? The second issue is I see that Ms. Harbinson is part of the meeting today. Aloha. The community would love to meet with you. And we're really curious what the CJRI came up with during the pandemic. So I hope that you can present at future meetings, because we would really like to know what the Criminal Justice Research Institute is doing, since the community wholeheartedly supported it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Kat.
Mark, we have a couple of hands up. Joanne and then Angie.
Okay.
They've been up for a while.
Go ahead, Joanne.
And Dan too.
Oh, thanks. I just had a quick comment about the discussion about the audits of the Arizona facility. I'm hoping that the audits are unannounced versus planned in advance. Healthcare organizations, about 25 years ago, went to unannounced visits from regulatory agencies. And the thought was that you should be ready at any given time to be inspected. You know, so it's not like when you're having visitors come to your home, you clean your house. You're supposed to be ready at any given time to have your care inspected. So I would just hope that that is happening with the facility audits. Thank you.
Thank you, Joanne. That's a good point. Appreciate it. We'll get back to you. Angie?
Hi, I just have a couple of final comments before my phone dies. There is a real issue was brought up earlier about retaliation. And I know from my son's perspective, they're told not to talk and they're afraid to talk. They've been told that if they say anything, they're going to be written up, which blows their community status. So I don't know how that gets addressed. My other final comment is there's so much concern and talk about overcrowding, and maybe I don't understand the process, but those that are still sitting there that have earned their community status, I don't understand what the holdup is to them still remaining in incarcerated. Thank you.
Dan, did you have a final remark?
I was once again clapping for Bob, but you know, let me just reiterate a few things quickly though. You know, he talks about needing to be able to see outside of the silo of our correction system and actually be able to create real solutions that involve all of the development of programs on the outside. And there are other places that have been doing this. And I mentioned in the chat that Pima County, Arizona actually was using Medicaid dollars for peer support, which allowed people to be able to not be incarcerated and actually have a peer supporter with them on the outside, and made sure that that individual showed up to their hearing. And they ended up seeing only a 4% failure to appear rate once they use that. So this is the ways that we can use the health system, and which, you know, by the way, is 90% federally funded, not to put that dollar sign on it, but to really rely on these Medicaid health systems that are funded much more continuously. You don't have to kind of worry anxiously about whether or not you're going to have the state and local funds to support whatever we're trying to do, but instead to tap into a lot more of those federal sources of funding, which also incidentally tie into community programs that could be effective for meeting people's needs, which I would argue ultimately would have result in fewer people ending up inside the jail to begin with. Thank you.
Thank you, Dan. Well, everyone, I really appreciate all of you that hung out with us today. This was a great discussion. To my fellow commissioners, thank you so much. You know, it's really not clear in my mind yet how this legislative session is looking, but I do have hopes from this discussion on continually to look at how we can draw a picture that we can present to the legislature on what needs to be of concern to them, and deal with the issues that we've been brought forth to us from the community. So with that being said in mind, November 18th is our scheduled next meeting, Lisa, at 9. The next 2 weeks will probably be committed to the oversight coordinator process. And I'll be shooting out some emails to the commissioners by the end of today to set up those meetings. So in terms of, you know, meeting every other week, right now we're going to be concerned with just taking care of the oversight coordinator. Yeah. And then that's pretty much what I have right now. Any last words from the commissioners?
Mark, just a reminder, I believe when we meet to talk about the hiring the coordinator, we probably have, I think we have to post it and then go into executive session.
That is correct. I mean, whatever date you guys decide on to meet to review the coordinator applications, that meeting date will be posted, but we'll also note that that would be an executive session meeting so that only the commissioners will be meeting, not the public.
Okay.
Does that have to be 30 days, Lisa? 7 days?
Yeah. Yes. So you gotta give me at least seven day lead time before you.
I agree. Ho'o mau kau kau. We gotta get it going.
Yes.
Okay. All right, Lisa. Thank you. Thank you, Ted. With no further ado, thank you once again, everyone. And we'll be seeing the commissioners next week, and we'll see in the community between now and the next meeting on November 18th. Thank you all so much for being here.
Thank you, Mark.
And your commitment. Aloha.
Aloha.
Thank you, Mark.